Unpaved, Sean Salisbury here to bring an authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.
To me, Tom Brady is the GOAT because he's done more with less than any player at that position we've ever had.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into the Tuesday before Thanksgiving Unpaved show. Sean Salisbury alongside Adam Sager. Follow us on Twitter at, or X, whatever you want to call it, at Sean Unfiltered, at Adam G. Sager, the show at Unpaved on Rumble. Go like and subscribe to the YouTube channel at Unpaved Sean Salisbury. Make sure you like and subscribe so you get the notifications when we go live Monday through Friday at this exact time every single day. Sean, how are we feeling today? We're getting close.
I'm doing great, man.
It's time to go.
Yeah, I get to pick up my fresh bird tomorrow, about a 22 pounder, among nice. Other things. All the other stuff is bought and ready to go. Get this turkey all dressed up, let it sit overnight, and be ready to roll Thursday morning. So I'm excited, man. My favorite holiday. My pops loved it as well. Just because of the lack of pressure of some, you know, the gift giving and
right.
all that goes on. I friggin' love it. You eat, you sleep, you drink, you eat, you sleep, you drink, and you socialize with friends. And I want everybody to come early in the morning, like watch the end of the Macy's Day Parade, mm-hmm. get the hors d'oeuvres beforehand, watch the games, celebrate all day. This isn't just a dinner event. And I'm about a 4 to 4:30, 4 o'clock, 4:30
okay,
eater
really?
Steak somewhere in that. Yeah,
we're not early.
Yeah, it used to be when I was going like at 3:30, but I decided to extend it so we can have that hors d'oeuvre stuff in the morning, like a meat platter plate, which has been a tradition in my family, and cheese and dips and all that. And then to settle in. So, you know, between 3:45 and 5 o'clock is when we usually settle in. But up early, preparing it, getting ready to roll, man, and I can't wait. And to those out there that are having a hard time, lost a family member at this time, struggling, I hope and pray you get through those, but I also want to be cognizant of those that we celebrate because, you know, we're fortunate and blessed. For those that are having trouble celebrating, I hope, and for anybody that's in my area and doesn't have a meal or a place to go, you're always welcome in my home. So I love this holiday and no pressure, just all love, man. And that's my
right.
favorite holiday.
And I mean, really good food. Just, I mean, if you know how to do it right, really good food that you could just sit back, eat on. That's why I kind of like the earlier dinner. I like the one-ish because then it's just sit, eat. If you're drinking, do whatever.
Get
that little nap or a little just rest watching football, and then boom, let's do it again. And you know,
yeah.
Get it,
I'm with you, brother, because there'll be a sandwich at some point. And earlier, I would always say earlier better than later.
Yes.
But as people start to flow in, I want to make sure that everybody's here. I don't want to force right. anybody to drive too early. And I know the holiday travel's a pain in the ass. So you adjust and adapt to it, but I friggin' love it. I love everything that goes with it, and plus the football. But you're right, man. The food, when you get it done right, just to stare at it. And I'm OCD, which is a shocker. I will not eat stuffing before the Christmas holiday. I mean, before Thanksgiving, any other time during the year.
I don't even know that it exists other than Thanksgiving or Christmas.
You can go. There's a couple sandwich shops you can go to. It'll make a great turkey sandwich, and they'll put cranberry sauce on it if you like, and the stuffing, and it's off the friggin' charts. But I, between Thanksgiving and stuffing, I'll eat it leftover the rest, but I will not, like right. in February, I don't go to company, you know, the company potluck dinners that they'll bring like 2 days before Thanksgiving, right. and everybody's eating in the conference room. well, why the hell do I want to eat that when I got 2 days later? I don't usually eat turkey other than possibly Christmas again, but I'm talking about where you really do the turkey the whole year. On like Easter, it's like usually ham for me or something else, or prime rib. Yeah. The other holidays, I just it's one time a year, so I savor it. And cream corn maybe twice a year, but usually the jalapeno cream corn, the things that are safe, the thing you eat, stuffing, turkey, and jalapeno cream corn. Other than that, maybe, but I savor it. I will not eat pre-Thanksgiving meal pre-Thanksgiving, if that makes any sense. I won't do it.
I'm right there with you. All right, before we get into Monday Night Football, get into some just ridiculous cheap shots, I want you to tell us about our newest advertiser with us, and that's Augusta Precious Metals.
Yeah, they're such a big part of our show now, Segs, and as we expand and get the signage up and stuff, I'm so grateful. Precious Metals and gold has become a huge player, and it's only going to get bigger in 26 and 27. So join in if your retirement matters and making the right choice matters and preserving your wealth or your value or your money matters. Now's the time to get in. So grateful to have a huge part of our show, Augusta Precious Metals, with us, and happy Thanksgiving to them as well. They made for a really nice present for us to join us and seek out to be a part of us. And we're so grateful. And, you know, watching these games and each week reminds me in football and in life that the clock's always ticking. We know that. We see it the good way and the bad way. But when it's late in the game, you can't freeze, and you don't freeze. You got to stay calm and make a smart move, right? And when it comes to our finances or our retirement or our wealth or preparing and preserving what's ours, I've been honestly over the last handful of years, and especially this last year, been looking at what's going on in our country over the last 18 months, 2 years, 10 years, even longer. And we're about $38 trillion in debt, and it'll hit 40 next year. And that's not one person's fault. It's just what goes along with it. And that's a lot of pressure that hits everyone, not only during the holidays, but year round. So if you're trying to retire, you folks out there that try to retire with confidence, well, Augusta Precious Metals is here to help you do that. And that's why I've been talking with this team for a while, and now they're a part of this and a part of my life. They're the ones helping people understand how to keep part of their savings in something real. And you can see down there, if you text Sean at 35052 or click the link in the description, you'll be able to see what we're talking about. They're the ones, is Augusta Precious Metals. They're trying to help you keep part of that savings in something real, gold. So it's not all tied up into what Washington does. There's nothing that's worse, nothing that's worse than having every move you make in your financial or personal or private or professional life revolve around Washington and politicians. You don't want that. And the money that goes on in Washington, they put together a short guide. It's a free one, did Augusta Precious Metals. The $40 trillion threat report. This is real, folks. It just explains simply and in a very understandable way that's not talking over you or under the expert what's going on and what options you've got. If you want to see, there's a link in my description, and you can text Sean to 35052, and they'll send it right over. Take a look when you have a minute. It won't take long, but it's worth understanding the game we're all playing in, and you are playing in it. The question is, do you want the winning game with Augusta Precious Metals? Again, it's the $40 trillion threat report. And tomorrow we'll have a guest on who is going to spend about 10 minutes explaining to you why you have to absolutely jump in and the reasons why, without talking too much stuff that we wouldn't understand. It's Augusta Precious Metals. Again, it's the $40 trillion threat report, Segs. It's a short free guide, and it just explains what's going on and the options we have. So retire with confidence, or live in working before your retirement with confidence with gold and Augusta Precious Metals. It's only going up, and for sure these next 2 years. So I would stay involved in paying close attention to what's happening. Augusta Precious Metals can help. Again, text 35052 and they'll send it right over. You can text Sean, should I say, to 35052 and get that free guide and get some answers to a lot of questions we have.
Yes, make sure you go check out Augusta Precious Metals. All right, Sean, Monday Night Football last night. Niners get the win, 20-9 over the Panthers. Panthers fall that half game behind the Bucks in that rough NFC South. But I thought this game, just watching it, was just a stinker. I mean, neither quarterback played well. I mean, Brock Purdy threw three interceptions in three straight drives. Bryce Young didn't look very good either against a decent 49ers defense that'll get after you a little bit. But, I mean, what was just your take of the quarterback play in this game and where we expect Bryce Young as a former first overall pick just a couple years back? And Brock Purdy, Mr. Irrelevant, just a couple years back, who we've seen some highs, we've seen some lows, but I thought these guys would come in and play a little bit better. But what was your just take on both of these guys last night?
I thought the quarterback play overall sucked. I did. That doesn't demean how I felt. This is, you know, compartmentalized. I'm talking about one game. I'm talking about Bryce Young and Brock Purdy. They did not look like playoff teams, and they didn't offensively, and they didn't look like playoff quarterbacks offensively. Well, obviously, because they both play on the offensive side of the ball. I thought both defenses stepped up. Segs, I think you had the under in the game.
Yes, I did, yep.
I think we had 49ers. I thought there'd be more points. You took the under. And shocking, I mean, not shocking towards you, but you were right. The defense showed up. Injuries involved, traveling on the road. I just thought that maybe that Carolina would show up, and they did not. But
I thought it would be better than what we saw offensively. No, I just didn't know that they'd get to those points, but it was bad.
No doubt. Now, here's what I do know about both quarterbacks. When I say physically limited, I don't mean they're not good players. I just mean they can't do certain things if they're late or not accurate. They're both size-wise. They're not that you have to be 6'5 to play the position, but you got to throw on time to windows and to openings as opposed to over, because neither one of them are going to wow you with their physical strength and physical prowess. So what they both have lived on in their careers is throwing on time, high football IQ, being mechanically sound, and getting out in front of it, because if they're late, you saw Purdy last night in his three picks, was late and inaccurate on the three picks. When you're late, you're desperate. And he doesn't have Stafford or Josh Allen or Mahomes' arm that if they're late, they can make up for it and still hit a coffee can-sized window because of their physical prowess, and then they can throw it through a car wash without getting it wet. The problem is if you're trying to throw it through a car wash without getting it wet and you can't, it gets wet and it's inaccurate. Two is that becomes a desperate situation when you feel you're behind your read. And then you make an inaccurate throw. If you can't hit the car wash, then it ain't going to get wet. So that's the problem with both last night. I thought the 49ers did a good job of overcoming and doing just enough. And the sign of a good team is to be able to play shitty and still find a way to win. Both these teams' playoff aspirations. Carolina had a chance to be in first place in the division. Obviously, the 49ers' schedule helps the next couple weeks. And then the last 3 weeks, they've got a battle to see if they can get over the number one spot in the West, which will be difficult, but they're still in it. It was an ugly win, but a win nevertheless. But neither one of these quarterbacks looked like a playoff caliber quarterback last night. If that's the way these offenses are going to play, if they get in, both will be eliminated in the first round unless they have the out-of-body defensive experience. So it was an ugly one, and it's another message to certain – you don't have to all look the same or throw it the same. But if you're going to be late, or if you're going to miss throws, or your mechanics aren't going to be sound, you better be accurate and on time with the football. They weren't last night. The 49ers are just a better overall roster and were able to overcome it. Good look on the defense, but neither offense last night looked anything like a playoff team, and both will have a hard time getting through January if they don't fix it. Obviously, the 49ers are in a tougher division, and Carolina can still go on and win the division. Last night looked like two teams that would be gone in a hurry offensively if they don't get it fixed. It was an ugly performance.
Yeah, I mean, just talking about the playoffs with these two teams, you got the Niners sitting at 8-4. So currently they are in, but that's because they have played one more game than Detroit, and Dallas is in there. But Detroit sits at 7-4. You got 49ers at 8-4. How good do you feel about the 49ers sneaking in as a wild card in this bunched up NFC playoff picture when we look at, you know, the NFC North with the Bears, Packers, Lions all fighting for a spot? You've got the South, we know, is just going to be the winner. It's going to be the Bucks or the Panthers most likely, and that winner is going to be the 4 seed. Then you got the East, you have the Eagles off on their own, and then you got the Cowboys sitting there at 5-5. So you have a big cushion there. So do you think, I think it really comes down to the last team in the NFC North with either the Bears, Lions, or Packers and the 49ers for that seventh spot. Who do you like when you look at these four teams, I guess?
I don't know those other two schedule. And go on a show in Northern California every week and was on this morning, mm-hmm. and we were discussing the 49ers, some of this stuff. Listen, my gut would tell me, judging from that, is that the 49ers will find a way to get their way in. But you can't afford a crap. Put it this way. They play like that offensively against the Cleveland Browns defense coming up this week. They will lose regardless of whether Shadur plays great or whether he plays average. They'll get beat because I'm just going to tell you, they will get dismantled by Cleveland's defense if that's the case, because Cleveland's defense is better than Carolina's. That being said, I do like the 49ers. The road in the NFC North segs, like you said, the division winner of the South, for sure one team in all four. I think the Rams are going to go on and win the division. I think the Rams are the best team in football. To me, it'd be like saying Ohio State. There's teams that can beat them, but you got to punch them in the face to beat them, and you got to body blow them and the rest of it. The Rams should be the odds-on favorite. They're the best team in the league right now. Record, I don't care what the record is. Eye test and the way they're playing. And Stafford's the MVP, which I know we'll get to. So, you know, I like their chances, the 49ers, sakes, but if you tell me three of the next five games their offense is going to play like they did last night, they're not making the playoffs. It'll be three teams from the North, one from the South, end up being probably two from the West, and then whoever's battling for the third, Cowboys, the last team in the second team or third team, should I say, possibly, if the 49ers fall their way out of Seattle. What, there's going to be a third team in both the North and the West that are going to be coming into last week or two of the season with a chance to get in the playoffs. Now, the Cowboys can take 5-5 and flip it to 6-5 in a hurry, but it's not going to be easy because that other team you're playing in the AFC has got plans and they're chasing now as well. So I do like the 49ers. Their defense is getting a little healthier. Their offense seems better going into the game, but you just can't. Brock Purdy's ability to make throws on time will dictate where they're going. They have enough good players to hang in. I'm going to say the 49ers find a way in, but it's not going to be easy because the guys – that would mean a good team like a Packers team or somebody else gets left out, or a Bears team. But I don't see the Bears segs losing four of their next, what, six games or four, whatever. I just don't. They're finding ways. Somebody that's good that we had going in that was a sure playoff team will get left out. So the West and the North are going to be one hell of a battle. And then the division winner in the South, the Philadelphia Eagles will win the AFC East. Now the Cowboys are just battling to see if they can handle their business and get.
Yeah, the Cowboys have a lot of work to do, and throw them in there because they're in that picture. But
my gut would say they're not going to make it. I still don't trust their defense. It doesn't travel well enough.
I think the fascinating part is when you look at the schedules for all four teams that we're talking about, with the Bears, Packers, Lions, and 49ers, you're talking about, you know, you have the Packers who have the Lions this Thanksgiving, then they play the Bears, then they play at the Broncos, then they play at the Bears, home against the Ravens, and at the Vikings. I mean, that's a brutal
schedule. They're losing half those games more
schedule.
Than likely.
Right. And then you go to Detroit. You've got the Packers, as I just mentioned, the Cowboys, who I think offensively can hang with them, so I think it's not an easy game for Detroit. Then you go to LA to play the Rams. Then you got the Steelers, who should have Aaron Rodgers back. Then you got at Vikings, at Bears. I mean, that's a.
So if they go 4-2, what will that put them at? 11
4
wins?
4-2 would put them 11-6.
That will get them in.
Yes.
3-3. You may get a 10 win team, Segs, in the NFC that sits at home.
Yeah.
You honestly might.
Yes, I think you will. You have the Bears, they play the Eagles this Friday in Philly. They go to Green Bay, home against the Browns, home against the Packers, go west to play the 49ers, and then home against the Lions.
That's a brutal schedule too, man. It's a good thing they took care of their business at the early on,
right,
that they can lose a couple, but hell, they got to win three of those game stakes, right? Three to get in, I would think. But that schedule, especially with the thin ice they're skating on in games that they're playing really close, you run into a team that doesn't make late mistakes and the Bears are going to be in trouble. So I still like what they're doing, but I know that the thought process, and I've even kind of, you could be casual if you like those Bears because they're going to get in. That schedule says every single team you named has playoff aspirations and is going to be in the hunt, other than the Vikings, more than likely.
Browns.
In that schedule, right. And the Browns. There you go.
Yes. But that's a tough defense.
But I'm going to tell you what, the Browns can disrupt the playoff picture in a huge way with their games that they have this week. I mean, you know, dealing with the Denver Broncos, with their game against, you know, the NFC North. There's going to be one of these teams that you're supposed to yawn at that they got their golf clubs in their trunk will be disrupting the and will upset somebody along the way.
Yes. The one thing the Bears have going for them is the offense continues to get better with Ben Johnson. They're getting Colson Loveland and Luther Burden, the rookies, going, which is tremendous for this offense. And then defensively, you're going to get Jalen Johnson, who's arguably a top five corner in the league. You're going to get Kyler Gordon, who's a top three nickelback in the league. And then Tyreek Stevenson will come back. And then, Sean, they won last week. They were playing with their sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth because two linebackers got hurt, linebackers this season.
Right.
They're down their top four linebackers from the start of the season. So they, now a couple, T.J. Edwards should be back this week against the Eagles. You could get Jalen Johnson back against the Eagles this week. So the defense is starting to get healthy, and I think that'll allow Dennis Allen to do a lot more what Dennis Allen likes to do.
Right.
Overall.
And they're going to have to play more consistently. Listen, and one thing I about the Bears right now, Segs, and this is not a knock, it's just they have been, is there how do they feel about themselves and their ability to win? Learning how to win at this time of year. We know the head coach knows how to do it. But making sure your players, that because right now it's about the time stakes. It's like anything. You're playing good golf. You got a lead. You got a two-stroke lead going into your last 18 holes in one of these big tournaments, right?
Yeah.
You got to keep your tour card. What is the natural reaction? Play close to the vest. Play. I don't want to say play scared, but inevitably that's what happens. So you're a little more tentative. And tentative to stay away from injury and tentative not to make big plays cause you to be injured and not to make big plays. So they have to have a mindset of, well, we haven't been here, but almost naive to the point where who cares? It's still a game. It's still 60 minutes. We're naive. We don't know what goes on here other than we got a bunch of guys that know how to make plays. But there is an art to being able to understand that and to be able to cut it loose, but do it smartly. And you're going to see around the league, say, somebody in the hunt who doesn't know how to win in December. Mm-hmm. We've seen it like in the, or even in January, if they get there, like a Jacksonville team recently with, you know, they'll do some spectacular stuff. You're like, what are you doing in the playoffs, right? How are you turning the ball over? Somewhere along the line, there's teams that just don't get it when the pressure rises and it's either all or nothing. They don't understand that you don't have to dominate. You just got to find ways and make plays at the right time. And that's something that you can only learn when you're in that situation, in a playoff situation.
And that's why a lot of the, you know, I see people on Twitter, you look on ESPN and whatnot, and they talk about the Bears and they talk about who they've beaten and how they've beaten them. But I kind of look at it the other way, that this is a young, naive team, like you're talking about, that is finding ways to win, learning how to win in close games, which is invaluable down the stretch now that your schedule gets a little bit tougher. If they were winning 40-20 every week, yeah, it feels good, but you've never been put in those pressure situations. Every week they're put in these pressure situations, so we'll see if it pays off as this season continues.
Segs, it's like the team, it's a great point by you, it's like the team that's win 9-10 in a row. Now you get to a point where your gardener or a golfer that's on schedule to shoot sub 60, that's happened, what, a dozen times in golf or in tournament golf, 8 times or whatever, that you know the last 3 holes, if I make one more birdie and par the next 2, then I'm shooting 59, which is in rarefied air. But then what happens? Things start to change a little bit. Naive's not a bad thing. We always talk about experience, but being the extreme other way where you're naive, like, I don't really give a shit, man. I'm cutting it loose. Because your thought process is, and Dan Marino told me this years ago. Dan told me, he said, Sean, after my rookie year and then my second year in 84, we went to the playoffs, to the Super Bowl. He said, I thought I was going to 5 or 6 more. He never got back.
Right.
And Danny said, I mean, he'd say, and I would, heck, watching Marino, I thought he was going to 5 or 6 more too. Never got back. So to cherish that, but being naive is okay as long as you're naive, but smart and playing smart football. And I'm going to tell you, Segs, right now, and it's a fact, you get to a point where learning how to win and lose, and I've never understood. Well, we all want it to be pretty, but if I lose 43-41, I go back to USC's team when Caleb Williams was there. Mm-hmm. Said, they'd score four, and then Tulane would beat him in a bowl game by two, and they'd hang 44. While you walk off there, you're feeling great, man, my offense is awesome. But then your defense wasn't, and you scored in 2 seconds, and the defense couldn't get stops, and you're not physical. And while you're like, man, we're really good offensively, but that didn't do a hill of beans. We're not in the playoff, and we're not winning a national championship. So some of that pretty stuff, the cosmetic stuff, is great. But when she peels off the makeup, and you're like, whoa! And she scares you because she looks like she could make a skunk's butt pucker, or vice versa. If the girl peels it off and says, damn, that dude looks different when he shaves or when he doesn't shave, that's ugly. Right. Same thing here. So you peel it back. I think I gained more substance on teams I've been on that we know we're talented and we know how to win, naive or experienced, but we've been through the test, man. If you're winning by 20 every game in basketball, and then all somebody pushes you to the brink, you don't know how to do it because you're so used to having that relaxed, free spirit. What happens when they push you and put their foot on your throat and you're like, damn, we haven't seen this in 14 weeks. So I am on the side of you want to win ugly or you want to really lose pretty that half the team can't play. I like teams that have learned how to win, and I can name three or four. Tampa was at the beginning of this year, winning late games. So Denver's done it a bunch of times. Your Chicago Bears have done it. They're finding ways. The Chiefs seem to always do it. The Cowboys did it this past week. So how it goes forward, it'll be on them. But I do know that the growth comes from winning games that you were, quite frankly, any other good team they play last night, said that they're playing the Rams last night, meaning the 49ers, or they're playing a Philadelphia team who just had it happen to them, or they're playing a New England Patriots team, they're not winning that game. They're not overcoming that. So they'd be grateful that, well, the Carolina shit their pants last night as well.
Yeah. Something else we saw last night, and it's just becoming too much of a trend, are these dirty-ass cheap shots that we saw Trevor Moehrig, the safety from Carolina, punch 49ers wide receiver Juwan Jennings, I mean, right in the nuts, right in that manhood area. And, I mean, it was the last play of the game, and Moehrig was asked after the game, what brought this on? Why did you do that? And his quote was, he was talking crazy. And so we see that. We also have, in college football, Darius Curry, the Colorado State QB. He spits on somebody after he throws an interception and gets pushed down. We saw Jalen Carter, week one, 6 seconds into the NFL season, spit on someone. We had Jamar Chase spit on someone last week and get suspended for a game. I don't know what it is that these young people think it's okay to do this kind of shit. Week in, week out, we see something like this, if it's at the college or the NFL level. And something the NFL and college football together, separately, whatever, have to come down and say, if anything like this happens, you're suspended 4 games immediately. Because this is the kind of shit you can't do. Because, I'm sorry, my kids are watching. Other kids are watching. And then you know what? They go out in their youth football games. They think it's funny because they're still young and impressionable. So they go do it. And then it just continues on and on and on. It's a bitch move by Trevor Moehrig last night. Trevon Moehrig. Let me get his name right. For doing that. And it's a bitch move from Darius Curry spitting on another player.
Every week it's happening now, it seems like.
Every week.
I think that you're a complete chicken shit coward asshole that somewhere along the line in your life, whether it's a teacher, a parent, or somebody, allowed you to think that this was okay, or a coach along the way.
Yep.
Because to me, the last thing that comes from my mind, we've all done fucked up things in our life, okay? At no time have I thought I'm going to spit on a human being, ever, a player, anything. If you got any set of balls, well, now that Jennings may only have one, depending on how hard he hit him and do it. I can't think on the spitting side what's worse other than stealing from your teammate. We need to treat this when it comes to the spitting or a shot to the nuts. You know, this ain't no Mitch Kupchak joke move. This is steers to the fist closed. This, we need to treat it like you would if you suspended a guy for 4 games on steroids. Yep. Automatic. There is no, you don't get to, we got it on camera, and I love the fact that Jamar Chase, it cost him over $500,000 a couple weeks ago. They went to try and overturn it, and they said, no, you're stick with it. Don't let it go. With this, he shouldn't be able to play the rest of the year. If you're going to spit in another opponent's face, you're done for the year. And then I'll review, I'll re- Right. I'll review it in the offseason, just like we would a domestic. Well, Sean, is it as bad as domestic violence? No, nothing's as bad as hitting a kid or hitting a woman. But I can tell you this, the next level down of seriousness, I'd rather have a guy get in trouble for smoking a spliff than I would for punching a guy in the balls or spitting in his face. Because to me, this isn't accidental. You have to think of it. It's a character flaw. So whether it's a DNA character flaw or you're just a horseshit human being and teammate, even if it's an opponent, to me, that tells me he can do it to his own teammates as well. Boom, get him out. He should not be able to play the rest of the year. Done. And when it comes to hitting another guy in the balls with a closed fist, that's not an accident. Oh, he was talking trash. What a shock. Receivers, defensive backs, football players talk shit to each other. Oh, really? But so whatever he called you, you know, fine. We're told, hey, man, players get called names by fans. Fans, again, that's not an excuse to punch a guy in the nuts. And on the other side, Jennings has got to have more self-control after the game because now he's going to get punished for extending a fight off the field. I mean, when the game's over, he could have walked away from that and said, listen, I didn't say anything. It was just the banter, the gamesmanship back and forth. He bunched up his fist and the tape doesn't lie. But on the other side, now it's not going to lie. He's going to get suspended as well or find a big chunk of change. But the only way you stop these asshole athletes, that some of them that do it, and it's not a blanket statement because most of them are good, fair, hardworking, good human beings that are competing and the gamesmanship of talking, I don't care about that. But this goes above and beyond. You actually have to think about this and plan this shit, right? So you hit a guy in the balls that, first of all, you're also in me. I think you lose your teammates. I do. When you spit on somebody or hit a guy in the balls, that to me is above and beyond. So while it's not the top level, I'd just as soon have you hit them harder. Guy smoked a joint because his shoulder hurt. I'm not encouraging that. You get my point, Sex. We need to be more severe because the only way some of these assholes that it hurts, Jamar Chase is never, and I don't, when I say assholes, I'm talking about the compartmentalized situation. I don't know him in real life, right. But when you do this, I can only judge that if you're that kind of guy on the field in front of everybody, what do you like when you're away from it? That's where my head goes. So whether they're good guys or not, there is a character flaw involved in this, and I would just as soon you hit them harder. And the only way you take them away, Jamar Chase is not going to spit on a guy again. Why? It's like that was $500,000 spit. So that's how you take away a chance to play and you take away their money. That's how you get them. You take away that. Oh my God, what are they doing? All the other stuff, periphery stuff. So you spit, you're done for the year. And if I'm his coach, screw what the NC2A or the conference does. I'm sitting his ass down and he's not going in uniform because that basically tells me you're allowing it on my team. Yeah. And then the hitting the balls, I don't care what was said between two dudes battling during a game. You can't hit a guy in the nuts with a closed fist. And Jennings has got to have some poise after to let that affect them. And you were scot-free. You didn't have anything to do. And because you wanted to show it, you couldn't handle it. Take care of it away from football. If you want to meet him, wait outside the locker room. I've heard those stories and seen them.
Yeah.
You wait outside the opposing locker room and you confront him then. But now he's put him in a situation. So both are going to get fined and one or two of them are going to get suspended. And they should. And you should hit them hard. This isn't just part of the heat of battle. This is chicken shit spit, and it's horse shit DNA character flaw, punch a guy close fist in the balls.
Yeah, it's something we're seeing way too much of in football, in sports. We see cheap shots in the NBA constantly. We see guys getting in face of other guys. I mean, it's constant in sports right now. I mean, you go watch a
you
high school
You shouldn't be talking
game.
About this each
right.
week.
You go watch a high school
physical
game.
Fist, right. I just want you go up and punch him in the face or in the gut and hit him in the balls or spit in his
face.
That's
my thing. If you're more like, don't be a bitch and hit him in the balls. Stand up and throw hands. Like I understand. I'm not saying like, you know, because I think punching a guy in the helmet is one of the dumbest things.
It's stupid. Well, your IQ needs to be questioned.
At least
yeah.
stand up and I mean, just go at. If you got that big of a problem, you're going to hit him in the nuts. Be a man and stand up and fight them. Like, don't do that. I mean, you just look.
I'll just tell you this, whether it's a hockey, I'll just use hockey as an example. I hate to say, like I said, it's not a blanket statement. There's plenty of, I've seen guys, you know, cheap shot when Matty Johnson hit Jeff Bookaboom from behind years ago without most of those guys will tap you on the shoulder and you chest up and fight it.
Yeah.
NFL player, you can learn a lot. So could every other sport learn a lot. From the way, if you're going to fight, which I'm not encouraging, but if you are, do it the right way. Chest up, get after it, do what you do on the practice field. Would you spit in your own teammate's face on a training camp fight? No, then why are you doing it to another guy? So to me, you can learn a lot from hockey. Grow up, be a grown-ass man. If you want a fist fight, then get after it and then separate and go your own ways and we'll have at it. But spitting and hitting in the balls is simply saying, this is my crutch. I'm not man enough to deal with you. So I'm going to go back. I'm going to hit and run. That's what this is. Yeah. Instead of stepping up, and they can learn a lot from the toughness and, quite frankly, the character of the way they fight in hockey. You may not like the fight, but at least they give you a chance to chest up. Even though referees stay out of it until they fall on the ice. You guys get after it. Wear your damn self out. But stay away from their balls and stay away from cheat shots and fight fair if you're going to fight.
Moving on. I think a big storyline that could be coming, and it depends on what happens this weekend, Lane Kiffin. And I want to take the angle of if Lane Kiffin leaves, if he goes to Florida or if he goes to LSU. My first question for you, Sean, is, and we will find out Saturday after the Egg Bowl what his decision is. So I think there's a decision made. Everybody in the parties know what's coming down on Saturday. But he doesn't want to take away from the Egg Bowl, which I'm shocked it hasn't leaked yet. But for whatever reason, it has not leaked yet. My first question to you, Sean, is your Ole Miss. He goes out, wins the Egg Bowl. They're in the college football playoffs. He tells you he is leaving to go to LSU or Florida.
Yep.
Is he coaching the college football playoffs for you? If you're making the decision as a school, not, I don't care what Lane says. What do you say as the school, as Ole Miss, is he coaching the college football playoffs for you?
Thanks to pre-qualify this, not that it's not offensive. Is it regardless of what Lane or anybody else tells you, any coach in the past, present, or 20 years and in the future, you can't be both places 100%. You just can't. Because if you take the job at LSU, what's the first thing you're thinking about? I gotta start recruiting.
Recruiting.
So you're recruiting for a team in your same conference, trying to get your staff together, which you're gonna probably raid a lot of the Ole Miss staff to go with you.
Yep.
And I'm just using Lane. It wouldn't matter if it was James Franklin or anybody else, right? And you know my guy's Lane, but this is just the cold hard facts.
This is the way it is.
If you know you're getting one gig, you can't be all into the other, because I'm trying to get the same guys I'm recruiting at Ole Miss, I am going to recruit at LSU.
Exactly.
Because it's the SEC. So you can't tell one guy, man, Ole Miss is my place and I love it. Or if you're James Franklin when you were at Penn State, or if there's going through, or is this guy getting fired or is he not? Then turn right around the next day and say, the best place in the world for you is LSU, and 24 hours ago it was Ole Miss. So you can't be all in both. That's number one. If I'm the athletic director and the president of the school, while my first gut tells me, because it's Lane, I want him to coach, but just the overall program, that you're no longer with Ole Miss, get your ass out and go coach LSU. I've got my assistants. They're primed well enough. We'll get by in a game. I don't know if it's going to be if we get to the final, to the playoff. But you know what? I got to trust that the staff we've hired that got us to 11-1, if they win, then guess what? Then I'm going to assume that they're prepared, that my coach Lane Kiffin has prepared them to be leaders and to take over a game. If he had the flu, he doesn't, he's moving on. So my first inclination is, well, I'd love to have him because I'd love Lane, let him finish it. But he chose not to finish it. If he takes an LSU or Florida job, got to go. And I'd say it about my own dad if he was alive, or my own kid, or me. Because you can't be all in at LSU and be all in at Ole Miss, yet you can't. Looking to the future, you're saying, well, I'm leaving old LSU because I think it's going to be better for me. That's what you're saying. Mm-hmm. To win a national title and money, that you can't recruit both. You come into my living room and tell me, hey, man, like at USC, and I love UCLA. Terry Donahue is one of my favorite guys. God rest his soul. I got recruited by both being in Southern California, Segs, and I'm just going to put it in the players thing. When I went on a recruiting trip to UCLA, it wasn't Terry who did this, a guy who I love still to this day. When you went there, they drove you. He took me over to drive me around USC on my recruiting trip when I was at UCLA. And then they drive you back over to, you tell me, Bel Air, Beverly Hills, or the surrounding area. USC was not at my time, too. What it was, hell, there were some tough times, right, around the beautiful campus. But the old, where do you want to live? And you know what my thought process hit? If you're spending time talking about USC, and this is years ago, showing me USC. They must have something you don't like. Of course, we all know that Beverly Hills and Bel Air and Pacific Palisades is and at Brentwood is a little bit better than where USC's campus is plopped into, just for the visual of beautiful new buildings. We got to drive over there to go to beautiful new, but that was okay. I like that grind. That's how you grow up. And I thought they got something you don't want. So while I loved UCLA and loved Terry, the decision when it came right down to it was easy for me. Same thing here. So you're telling me LSU is better if you go, or Florida, or wherever you go. So you can't be in on both. And number one, and then you could say, well, I'm all in because we started this. Well, you then finish it January 17th. Well, the job will be gone. Okay, well, that's just part and parcel. It's a blessing and a curse to be good. And Lane's as good as there is going the way he coaches. The problem is, the curse is, you got to leave 90 guys behind, 85, 100 guys behind that you said you were all into. So there's part of that legacy. And whatever Lane makes, I support him 100%. I'm not telling him his money, players can leave, you can leave, go for it. But as far as coaching, here's how I'm going to do this, Sakes, because there's too much emotion built in. You know what I'm doing? Is I'm taught, because some of those kids that are at Ole Miss are going to transfer to LSU. You do know this, correct? If he goes, they will leave. I am allowing, and Lane's not allowed to be in the room. We're just doing it the old-fashioned way, brother. We're counting votes. That's how the players are deciding. We just like fans don't get a say at the table unless you turn your cable off and don't want to watch TV, or you go to a restaurant and it's shitty, so you're just not going in anymore, or whatever. They're charging too much. The only way you keep buying an automobile, they're going to keep charging. Okay, so I'm not letting Lane or any other coach sit in the room. Hey, we're 11-1. We got a chance to be the national champion. The players will vote, because you know what? In a quiet vote, they'll be honest. These players will be honest. And if they come out and Lane Kiffin was voted, whether it's unanimous or majority, old school, man, my two versus your one, that's the way it works, then we will allow him to coach. It doesn't usually end up working out well, but I think Lane would understand that. And then the question is, will he be dedicated? And I have a sit down with him. I'm finally letting the players get the seat at the table. They get to decide. Not the athletic director, because he's emotionally pissed, or he's happy, he wants Lane, or the president, or the athletic director. Maybe they disagree. Of course Lane wants to coach. Grab a ring and then move on. That ain't bad. But I still think there's a chance that Ole Miss keeps him. And I wouldn't blame him, because I think he's one of my favorite guys on the planet and a great coach. But my inkling would, the players are going to decide, because my emotion would say, you went to LSU, you're recruiting the same players, you go coach there. My assistant will take care of this job. That's just the way it works for me. I would not let him coach, no matter who it is, if we were in the playoff and he took another job, unless the players decided against it. But if I'm making the decision, he's not coaching, and I love Lane.
Now, you bring up the fact about the coordinators possibly going with him. Now, what if Charlie Weiss Jr., who is his OC, and Peter Golding, who is the DC, what if they're going with?
They wouldn't accept the job right now, though, Segs. They would, because you know what, Lane wouldn't hire. It'd be a behind the scenes, dude. When you're done, let's talk contract. Because right now, if you're Golding or if you're Charlie Weiss Jr., you know what your thought process is? I may be the head coach at Ole Miss, and then I'm not going, and I'm going to keep a bunch of these guys here. So normally now, if you can hire somebody and you do it, but think about even how much more, if you're going to leave and go get $100 million, I get it 100%. That's my guy. But in the process of leaving, you take four other people with you, and they don't get to coach in it either. Right. Yeah, no. My thought process would, you guys stay there. Let's see how it goes for you if I'm Lane. You know I love you and would like to have you. But these kids deserve for you to coach them and finish them up. So I would take another step. I would not allow us to hire coaches until after the season's over. Everybody in the same. Yes. I'm talking about, it doesn't matter if it's Bowling Green, if you are eligible to play in the – if you're an eligible a Power Four or one of the Group of Five, I would say that there's a window for everybody. You can't sign somebody before this. You don't get to pluck them, just like I would for the transfer portal. I would say, well, you're going to lose out on good coaches. No. If you don't let anybody hire them, it's a free-for-all, just like baseball free agency, just like football free agency. Put a time from January 9th to whatever, or December Christmas to whatever. You can interview them. You can't announce it until the season's over. These kids deserve it. The assistant coaches deserve it. Because there's going to be some assistants that maybe Lane doesn't take. There's going to be some that maybe Ole Miss doesn't want to keep. And guess what? Their ass is out of a job.
Right.
So to me, the best way to fix it is, talk to the agent, what have you. There will be no, and if you got to treat it like show cause too. If you decide, if you sign this in private with your agent behind the scenes before the window opens, the tampering part, I'm fining you $25 million of your contract. Whatever it is, hit them hard. So you want to end all this shit? Put a date on it, just like you would a transfer portal or free agency, because that's what it is. It's coaching free agency.
Exactly.
Why do I want to? Then it doesn't affect the kid. The kids can all speculate. You coach them through. If they want you bad enough in December, they're going to want you bad enough in January.
Yes.
So that's how you end this thing. But no, unless the players decide, it doesn't matter who the coach is. You should expect that if you're going somewhere else, you don't get to coach my team. And I'd say that about any coach in the country.
Yeah.
Unless the players want him.
It's going to be fascinating if he leaves, because, I mean, even like you say, even if he does leave, or if he says he's leaving and they're like, he's going to coach, it's like, well, how do you do both? You don't. But, and that's where I kind of bring up the coordinators. If Charlie Weiss Jr. knows I'm leaving to LSU,
he would be all in either.
Exactly. So that's where it's tough. And the ones who get screwed here are the kids. Okay. Another question.
Real quick, thanks. About one last thing. You know, the only thing that concerns me is, you know, like I said, my affinity for Lane. But just talking real, I'm going to talk real like I would if my own kid was sitting next to me and he was trying to get the gig or decide whether to take it or not or when to take it or not.
Right.
Is my one concern. Not about the money. Go get the bag. If you can get it, Lane, I'm all for it. Any coach, I'm all for the kid getting the bag. Although I'd like to regulate some of this NIL money that you're getting paid without performing, that kind of thing. But I get it. Go get your money. I'm not in your wallet. But are we going to have the same energy for Lane that we have for other players that chase championships? Durant, we got on him. He got his championship. Mm-hmm. Where'd he get it? He got it at Golden State.
Yep.
The one athlete who's never, two that I can think, I mean, there's plenty more that have been dominant, that have never chased, that deserve more credit. Michael Jordan, although at the end of his career went elsewhere, but he wasn't chasing a title and bringing 14 veterans. You know, talking about in Chicago, and Steph Curry.
Yep.
Steph has done it. People have come to him, which is great, but Steph Curry hasn't gone after it. It's people chased him.
Yeah.
So even as good as KD is, one of the best ever, there's still that, but am I right or wrong?
Oh, 100%.
We put it on Harden, MVP, but been chasing championships. And we go to football. We put it on LeBron. Hell, we put it on LeBron.
100%.
We do. There's no question. So in football, when do you get to a point as a coach? I don't want Lane to have the reputation, and maybe he does, aside from being a great dude and a great coach and come a long way. Like I said, he's one of my favorite people in the world. To get the reputation of he's the guy that walks into a room and has a great gig, the hottest, and then he's looking over the shoulder at the next big one that comes in, right? The next best one that comes in. And when you think about his jobs, how much better is Ole Miss than Florida than Ole? I mean, how LSU and Florida than Ole Miss? Now, I'm talking about today's football. Not much.
They may have more
recruiting resources, but with NIL, the recruiting's changed. That's a great equalizer.
Exactly.
So if Ole Miss gives you the same amount of NIL as LSU, is LSU really a 10 times better place to live and better program? I don't know. And vice versa, is Ole Miss better than Florida? Is Florida better than Ole Miss? It's what's in the guy's soul who's getting recruited, I mean, or who's getting paid to coach. So for me, I would hate for a guy who's this good a coach to get to the point, because then if Ole Miss offers it, what happens if all of a sudden Alabama comes up and Lane says, I want to go follow up with, I don't know.
Right.
Or you, my point is, do you want to get to the legacy? Because right now, the one thing you can't say about Dabo, as much as he can piss you off or he whines or any of that stuff, you know what you can't say about him? That he went and chased a bigger job when other jobs were out there.
Yep.
I mean, even though that he's taken Clemson to a national power and won a title. He's got one, right? Or does he have two, Sags? Does he have one or two? He's got two. That's right. He got a second one. That's right. So he's got two championships. And you can never accuse him. So if legacy matters, winning national championships, will we, Tim Duncan's another one. Great point, Dr. J. Will we ever put he had to leave Ole Miss to win one, or would it serve him better legacy rights wise to say he stayed? Because look what he's done at Ole Miss. Epic. What Lane's done, the only thing left to do is go win an SEC championship and win the national championship, put the ring on your finger at Ole Miss. I would have much rather had that happen than him leave, than take the job now and have to say he can't coach and go, because I just don't want Ole Miss to have a sour taste for him or them, because it's been a hell of a relationship. But it does affect legacy because you don't want to say, well, he had to go somewhere else, because Lane's good enough to coach a lot of teams to this position. He's proven it. The question is, can he get over the top at Ole Miss, or does he think he can get over the top at Ole Miss?
Yeah, and my next question kind of goes with our next topic as well, with the college football playoff rankings being announced tonight. And I don't expect to see much change with everybody winning and the way things are.
You won't at the top.
Yes, but my question is, if Lane Kiffin leaves after Saturday and you're the committee, does that hurt Ole Miss? Does that take Ole Miss from the sixth seed? Let's just say everything plays out exactly the same. Does it take them from the sixth seed to the ninth seed?
Okay.
Because you don't have your head coach that is so highly thought of that LSU and Florida and probably Penn State at least called the best jobs available are all going after this guy. We saw it happen with Florida State. They didn't make it despite
an undefeated record. A player and a coach are the same. They're on the same list. They dress in a locker room and they play on the same sideline, right? If this is okay, if Mateer gets hurt, are they going to treat Oklahoma different? You're damn right they are. You're damn right they are. If all of a sudden Kirby Smart decided I'm taking the LSU job, which of course should we with all the contract? You're damn right. So if you're going to tell me your quarterback goes out and Florida State got heavily punished, and they weren't very good without him, but they got punished simply because their quarterback was not going to play. He was injured. So if I'm taking away one of the best play callers in the world, a guy who's been great as a head coach for a while now,
yep,
and I'm taking him away, you absolutely, if you're going to do that to a team about a player, Lane's involved in every single snap. A wide receiver's involved in every snap, but maybe get the ball thrown to him seven times. Right. This dude, yes, you absolutely. Now, that doesn't mean they can't go win it all, but if you're talking about the pre-stuff getting ready, you can't keep them there, and you sure as heck can't move them up unless the other coach coaches them to playoff wins and they start. But then it's just single elimination anyway. Right. So for me, you're damn right you got to treat it the same way. Pains me to say about my guy, but you just do. And if you're not, it's a double standard, and it'll go back to the committee has no protocol on how they punish or reward teams. If they don't, you lose Lane Kiffin. You lose a big part of your soul at LSU. Period.
100%. So yeah, I think it'll be fascinating to see not tonight's rankings, because again, I don't think it's up here on our screen now. I don't think much is changing all the way until we see this is the AP poll. So sorry, let me pull up the college football.
I don't know, Segs. Are you punishing? Let's see, Bama. Did they play last week? They didn't, did they? Did they? They beat somebody up.
Yeah, they beat Eastern Illinois.
There you go. That's right. So you're going to keep. Now I was going to say, if Bama didn't play and BYU had their victory, would BYU jump to 10th, and would you move Alabama back? You know, but I can't. Alabama won the first 10, 12 teams. I don't know. Do you have a conversation between Vanderbilt and Miami, the University of Miami? Says I don't know. Maybe that conversation. But in the first 10, Now for the eye test, if you think Notre Dame's better than OU, even though OU had one hell of another damn good defensive performance, then fine. Yeah. But the first five aren't changing. And the second five, I wouldn't imagine there's any shift. It starts to – you wonder the Michigan, Miami, where that group in the third level go from 11 to 15. The first 10 aren't moving, especially the first five.
I'm going to be interested to see what happens with Michigan and Texas. Does Texas, with three losses, stay ahead of Michigan? I think that'll tell us something. Texas beat Arkansas, Michigan beat Maryland on the road. Do they jump with USC falling? Obviously, they'll fall down to probably about 20-ish.
I'd even put us back. I mean, we're going to fall. I'm not even so sure we stay in the top 26, but I guess because it's Oregon and who you lost to, make 4 or 5 spots. You're probably right to 20, 21, somewhere in that range.
Yeah. So, I mean, that 11 through 17 mark, I think, is what I want to see in terms of, you know, you still have Georgia Tech with one loss. Where are they? They're all the way at 16 right now in the college football playoff rankings. So how high do they get if they continue to win? Michigan plays Ohio State. If they get what would be the best win of the season this weekend and go to 10-2. Now all of a sudden, how far do they jump?
Who'd you say? Who was the biggest win of the weekend, Sakes? Who'd you say?
No, if Michigan beats Ohio State, that's the season.
No doubt.
For anybody, how high does that catapult them? So there's a lot of things that, you know, we want to see that back half, that 11-17, I think, is where we're really looking at these rankings tonight. Like
if
I said,
Michigan beats Ohio State, Sakes, they're in the playoff right now, in my opinion. Okay. They go beat Ohio State. Somehow, some way, and I know we're thinking, okay, that would what have to catapult them above University of Utah, Segs, or somewhere in that range, right? BYU, right. Utah range. You beat the team that is the reigning national champion and still has not lost a game, and you go beat them for sure. You're bypassing the Longhorns, Georgia Tech, Southern Cal, Vandy. I would put them ahead of Miami. It's that BYU Utah thing right there. They're for sure getting to the 13 spot. And they, depending on how they win the game, if they do, well, that's got to be a lot of points in the FedEx Cup standings when it comes to golf catapult Michigan if it's an impressive win, no doubt.
It would be fascinating to see if that happens. So yeah, I don't expect a lot of change. I think the top 10 will be exactly the same. I don't see them changing anything in the top 10. So we'll just have to kind of wait and see. Before we get out of here, we always do our bet of the day. If you don't know, if you're a college basketball fan, you haven't really paid attention, today's a good day of college basketball. We got the Players Era games going on. We've got the Players Era Festival, as they're calling it. We got the Fort Myers tip-off. That's going on right now. Michigan State's beating up East Carolina. We got St. John's against an underrated Baylor team.
I love this, Sakes, because it's in the daytime we get college hoops around Thanksgiving. Yep. It makes it's like a Saturday, but it's a Tuesday, which I love. And, you know, I hold the Baylor basketball program in high regard. They've always been, you know, over the last, decade plus, Coach Drew said, they've been in really good position to always you never can overlook them no matter where they're ranked because they've been consistently good for a while. Well, far more consistent than their football team has over the last decade plus.
That for sure. We've got Michigan playing Auburn, which is going to be a fascinating watch because Bruce Pearl, who just left Auburn and his son is the coach now, is calling the game. So,
and I would imagine Bruce is also helping his son put game plans in too.
Yeah, like what is going on? Like, how can you? That's the whole thing of like Tom Brady talking to other coaches of other teams and then calling the Raiders game that team's playing. So it's just that one.
Well, I hope he's critical and complimentary. I hope if his son makes his calls the wrong time out, that Bruce calls it right. That's the way it should be.
I mean, if Bruce is sitting there talking to Dusty May about what they're going to do, you know, kind of how they play, what's to stop him from turning around? I mean, hey,
Bruce Pearl's fine. I'm not giving you any information. Yeah. Your son's going to beat us the right way. Not
Bruce Pearl's known to be a little dirty when it comes to gameplay and the way he does stuff behind the scenes. So that's an interesting situation.
You're not getting any insight if your dad is broadcasting a kid's game at any level in any sport, or if a guy is an owner and a broadcaster. I'm not getting. Matter of fact, I'm telling you something that you didn't. That we have zero idea that we're going to do. That's what I'm doing.
Yes, for sure. But our bet of the day, as the best game of the day, along with Michigan Auburn, number 17 Tennessee takes on number 3 Houston in the Players Area. Era Festival. That game is at, I think, 5 o'clock tonight, I want to say. I just had it up. Yeah, 5 o'clock on TNT, 5 o'clock Central. That is. Houston is a 3.5 point favorite, 133.5. Houston was taken to the brink last night, you know, in a game that I really thought they should have lost yesterday when they faced, now I'm blanking, Syracuse.
Resilient, though, Segs. Found a way, as we talked about. Yep.
But it'll be interesting to see now against a very physical Tennessee team. Syracuse isn't known for their physicality. It's that zone. It's that, you know, they're starting to play a little different as, you know, things get better and better. And they have the young Anthony kid, Carmelo's son, playing, and he played decent last night. But Tennessee's much more physical. I know Houston plays physical, but coming off that game that's a close game last night against Syracuse, and now you jump right in with a physical Tennessee team, it'll be interesting to see how they respond back-to-back days.
What's your pick?
I'll
tell you how I feel.
3.5 is, I think, just a little too short for me. If it was 5.5, I'd take Tennessee. But I think 3.5, I'm taking Houston. And the 133.5, give me the over.
Even with both one team being physical and Houston not only being physical but contest every shot, they'll be as good as they'll be as a top defensive team in a country as the season goes on. I'm with you. 3.5, give me Houston. I think Houston is in as good a position they've been in since Kelvin Sampson's been there, and they've been in some good positions to win it all. This may be as good a team as he has. That's number one. Two is, I can promise you this. After what happened against Syracuse, even though there's not a lot of time in between games, it was resilient, and he'll compliment him on that, Coach Sampson will. But the wrath of Coach Sampson, you better come out tonight, play it with intensity, and play defense, and get to both backboards and contest every damn shot they throw up. I like the over as well, even because Tennessee's going to play kind of like they'll play. Yeah. Yes, it's going to, and that's only a buck. That's 70 to 72 to 68, okay? And I think they'll get there. But the things I know about him, Rick Barnes is a good football coach. He good basketball coach, right, Segs? You fan. Yeah. But has not been able to close it out the way you want right at the top. And Texas saw that. How many years has Rick been at Tennessee now, Segs? It's got to be. Is it double digits?
Yes, he been there? It's got to be, right? Maybe
Providence and UT. I mean, it goes fast, but it's got to be double digits by now, right?
Yeah.
Am I crazy or am I right?
He got there in 2015.
So right around. So it's 10 years. So it feels. And then obviously with Coach Sampson, the impact. So both teams will be disciplined and well-coached. Tennessee's physical. We know Houston will be as physical like Michigan State as any team in America. And there's nobody that will dive on the floor, loose balls, contest shots more than Houston will. Give me Houston at -3.5 and give me the over in this game. I love the Houston Cougars team. And I just got to knock down shots late in tournaments. And when you get to the Final Four, a couple of them, and they'll end up wearing a ring or in a championship game. I love the Cougars tonight, and I love the Cougars throughout this season. They'll have a couple stumbles. But the wrath of Kelvin Sampson, I mean that positive because those kids respond to him. University of Houston's real, and he's built something special. Give me the Cougs tonight. And by the way, subscribe to this show, please. We love having you. I'm not begging, well, kind of. But subscribe on YouTube. We love to have you. Get all the notifications. And you guys have made a world of difference in just the bandwidth and the impact of the show. And you're a big part of it. And you make us think so. Please do that. And tomorrow, Segs, one thing I want to get into after we talk about some of the hoops and we'll talk about tomorrow from today is how is Matthew Stafford playing this well? And I'm going to tell you what I believe, aside from that he's pretty damn good anyway, is what happens at this stage of your career, the guys I've talked to and watched, when you get a little older, shouldn't your game start to get worse? And I'm going to tell you why his doesn't.
All right, I like that. And then we'll look ahead to our Thursday games. Wednesday will be our last show of the week. We are going to take Thursday, Friday off, Thanksgiving, Black Friday. So tomorrow we'll get into all the games on Thursday. We'll talk about Bears-Eagles on Friday. That's a big matchup in when it comes to playoff implications in the NFC. We got a big college football weekend. Obviously, Michigan-Ohio State, Alabama-Auburn, rivalry weekend in college football, and it's the last week of the regular season as well. What teams need to win to keep, you know, what teams could lose their playoff spot or put themselves in a situation where maybe they're on that bubble. We got a lot to talk about tomorrow, so tomorrow's going to be a really fun show.
And what will the effect of Friday's A&M Texas game have on the loser and decisions? If it's Texas, is everything set in stone? And will you finally be convinced, if you're not, how good A&M is if they win this football game? What is it going to take? We'll discuss that tomorrow as well.
All right. We will be back tomorrow, 1 p.m. Eastern, noon Central. Thank you to Triple E. Thanks to Laura. Thanks to Bailey. As always, behind the scenes, again, like Sean said, follow us on YouTube at Unpaved Sean Salisbury. We will talk to you guys tomorrow. Peace.
Unpaved Sean Salisbury here for bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.